Hello and welcome back to the Tarlhurst End podcast. This is episode number 281. Well, Tom Holmes' overhead kick wasn't enough to secure the 3 points in this one. A must-win game? Perhaps so. But many Royals will be feeling aggrieved after having 3 penalty claims denied. And I think they were pretty clear as well. I'm your host, Adam Jones, not the original podcast host, not the deputy. I'm stepping in this week in place of Mark and Ollie for this episode as the deputy's deputy. Can you hear the barrel being scraped? I think we can. Not to worry, though. What we lack in hosting prowess is more than made up for by punditry greatness, as Mr. Ben Thomas joins me to review this afternoon's clash against Grant McCann's men. Ben, how's it going?
It's all right, mate. It's as we said off air, we normally take sort of 24 hours at least to let, you know, the result marinate. But yeah, it's going okay, thanks. It's not too bad. Eager to get on with you, Adam, and have a chat about the game.
Definitely. I think it's much needed as well. As Ben said, yeah, we're coming on straight after the game. So it might feel a little bit weird for you if you're listening kind of on a Monday. But yeah, we're doing this on a Saturday evening at 7:20, I make that. So yeah, we'll get straight on with it. But yeah, this show may feel a little streamlined today, but we'll roll with it. Come with us on our journey as we go straight into the all-important recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, first of all, I like to start chronologically, really. So if we take our minds back to 2 p.m, even before a ball had been kicked, really, we found the lineup was unchanged, really, from last weekend's game. Not a massive surprise, considering our lack of centre-back options, in the absence of Liam Moore and the fact that the system, well, arguably worked really against Russell Martin's side. The bench didn't look exactly the strongest with recent injuries to Moore and Ajaria, but I think seeing Aziz in there did provide kind of a reason for optimism against the side that had won their last 4 games. So it wasn't going to be an easy task, as I said on Thursday in my tweet. I said it wasn't going to be an easy task whatsoever. Firstly, Ben, if you cast your mind back to the team news then, were you happy with this unchanged lineup? And secondly, because it's been playing on my mind, did you think this was a must-win game?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the team selection, first of all, Ads, I think it was he would have come in for a lot of criticism had he changed it. You know, it was a phenomenal result, as we said on the pod last week, against Swansea. You know, very, very unexpected, but very welcome. You know, there was no reason to change it. He's obviously not seen anything in training this week to kind of blow his mind or alter his mind in any way in terms of putting different people on. So yeah, you know, very, very, very happy with the setup and the personnel that we're playing. In terms of the second question, in terms of must win game, yeah, 100%. You have to win your home games. You know, in this league, you've got to be strong at home. Where we are in the league, regardless of points deduction, we've got to start picking up points. And it seems to me at the moment that really our home form massively needs to change. You know, the last time we won at home was, I think, 25th of September. And that's a problem for us. That's a real issue for us. So on paper, yeah, all due respect to Hull, very, very good form. But this is a game that we really needed to win. And I felt with the personnel and the setup that we had going, we should have won the game. You know, there would be very few Reading fans out there that would have complained with the team selection. You know, straight after the game, I'm left with quite a sense of disappointment about the result, because it should have been 3 points. I felt we did enough. You know, we can talk till, you know, tomorrow morning about the referee's performance, but ultimately we didn't do enough to win the game. And that will stick with me for a little while, because we, as I said, we have to keep winning these home games, and we have to keep beating teams like Hull in order for us to get up the league. Defensively, they were very, very good. They were very well organised, and credit to Grant McCann and his team for prepping his side to get the point out of the game. I felt after they scored the goal, they didn't really do much in the game, really. We should have had enough about us to kind of unlock them and kind of go and get the 3 points. So, yeah, you know, team selection, fine. On paper, should have won the game, didn't. And it's, you know, for me personally at this stage, it's 2 points dropped.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with every single word of that. I think in our current situation as well, with the points deduction, it kind of reinforces the need for us to get as many points on the board as possible. Obviously, the point helps and it takes us, you know, 1 point clear of the, you know, 1 point clear of the relegation zone. But for me, it was 2 points dropped after taking the lead, really. So I'd 100% agree on that. And I'd agree on your view on the system as well. I mean, Tom Deli Bashiru, I thought, was very good on the left wing against Swansea City, a position that I didn't think that he suited, but proved me wrong last weekend. And yeah, he was a decent enough threat as well today. So I'd say that's absolutely fair enough. Let's head into the game then. Hull probably shaded the opening kind of quarter of an hour, but we did have kind of our own chance just after that through John Swift. And I want to get your view on this because I'm not sure about the answer to this question for Swift's chance. I mean, was that chance harder than it looked? It almost seemed like he had too much time in a way. So can we be kind of too harsh on him for that?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because obviously we're sat here not being professionals and not in that mindset, really. But for me, looking at it as a fan, just lift it over. I feel like, you know, John Swift has enough quality to score that goal, and it was a wasted opportunity. Had he scored that goal, I think we would have really kind of turned the screw on them a little bit, because at that point it was a breakaway goal. They weren't expecting it, and it would have put a kind of our tails up and really put us in the driving seat for the 3 points. It just seemed like a baffling thing, because he'd done the hard work in terms of being able to break the offside line there and get through. But he just kind of fluffed the chance, really. And, you know, we didn't know at the time, but that was kind of a prelude to the afternoon. We didn't do enough, as I said previously, to win the game. And that's the most frustrating thing about it. He knocks that in over the keeper, and we're probably good for sort of, you know, 2-3, maybe even more goals, and we're getting the 3 points. So that was a real turning point in the game, because the confidence seemed to drain out of the forward line, particularly. You know, Andy Carroll was good in spells, but second half particularly, which I know we'll go on to, he was just dropping far too deep to go and get the ball, because the service wasn't there. I said at half time Halilovic was putting some good balls in, felt like we should have got him more on the ball in the second half, and then he was subbed off for Aziz very quickly. So it was disappointing that chance wasn't converted. I felt that John Swift, being John Swift this season, that should have been a goal. And I think had that gone in, we would have been looking at a very, very different result, from a mentality point of view, but also just kind of being able to control the game a little bit more. And that was the kind of thing that we lacked. We were good in spells, but we didn't do enough really to threaten them and kind of push them back into their own half, really. So, yeah, it was, for me, it was a missed opportunity. And I think looking back on it, he will feel like it was as well, because all he needs to do is just lift it over the keeper and put us, you know, 1-0 sort of fairly early on in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that as well. And I agree with your point on chance creation. I said in my group chat just a little bit earlier on that I think chance creation was the real problem with us. We did manage to get ourselves back into it after Hull's kind of little spell kind of in the early 15 minutes, in the opening 15 minutes. And Tom Deli Bashiru had a good shot. I have to admit, we did live dangerously at times, though, still. And probably didn't deserve the half-time lead, even though we should have had a penalty just before that. I think for me, again, like all three decisions, if that isn't a spot kick, then, you know, quite frankly, I'm the Pope. But nonetheless, brilliant bicycle kick by Tom Holmes, though. You know, only Paolo Maldini, I think, could dream of doing something like that. I think he's the Italian Tom Holmes, shall we say. But moving away from all that waffle, what were your overriding emotions at half time? Were you relieved to go into the break 1-0 up?
Well, I think, you know, it was a brilliant goal. That's the bottom line. And the celebration was brilliant. And it's very difficult to explain to fans of clubs that maybe aren't local, but when you see a player that's come through the academy and so much a turbulent season last year, but, you know, different positions, injury this year, and to score a first goal like that just the kind of the outpouring of emotion, which is phenomenal. And I'm not being over dramatic there, because it was just great. You know, kind of the area that he scored in, fans were just going ballistic, and it was just brilliant to see. He's a thoroughly nice guy as well. You know, really, really like Tom Holmes. Really, really, you know, big fan of him. And just the way that he's kind of got on with the job that he's been asked to do in various positions over the last sort of 18 months to 2 years. So great goal, brilliant position for the goal. No, not really. I mean, you know, in terms of going in being lucky at halftime, I saw quite a few tweets and stuff online at halftime about that. No, not really. I mean, you know, we took the chance that we had. We had two clear-cut chances, and we scored one of those. It was a fantastic goal. I didn't really feel that Hull did, although as you quite rightly say, they were good in the first 15, 20 minutes or so. They didn't do enough really to kind of warrant getting in at halftime a sort of, you know, level pegging or ahead. You know, we took the kind of second chance we had, and that's all you can ask for, really. My frustration is that we didn't kick on from that. You know, we came out and second half and they scored very, you know, reasonably early. And it, you know, we didn't kick on from there. And that's a symptom of this team. You know, last week we saw a lot of resilience. This week this just wasn't there. And that's a concern for me as a fan watching it, because actually you want some form of consistency, you want some form of kind of consistent performance. And that's the overriding feeling that I have at the moment, is that how can we go from last week and kind of, you know, concede and then score straight away, or at least show some kind of resilience to that. And this week not really do that. That's the frustrating thing. And the overriding emotion I have from the whole game is frustration. And I hope that can change and we can move forward into next week. But it's difficult. You know, it's a very, very tight league. Hull came very well organised. We should have had enough to unlock them, really. But we just didn't create enough second half to be able to, you know, to force the issue and get the 3 points.
I think you touched on it there, but I think that the main two qualms that I'd have with Pownage's kind of tenure so far is how convincing we are. I mean, I think the only real game, I mean, the only game on top of my head that I can remember through Pownage's reign, there's probably plenty of others and I've just had a mind blank, but the 3-0 win against Sheffield Wednesday at home, where I think they had a man sent off as well. That was one game where I felt like we were convincing. But in terms of other games, I don't think we're convincing enough, and I don't think that helps the consistency. And that's my second point, consistency. I don't think it's been good enough under Paulo at this stage. You know, I like the guy, you know, and I wouldn't, you know, call for him to go or anything, but he needs to work on his consistency, I think. And I think that in the end, that was detrimental to our playoff hopes last season. But as you said, second half comes along, getting back onto the game. Andy Yeardom goes off for Dejan Tetek. I hope that Yeardom isn't out for too long. We start the second half off like we did the first, really, in kind of a really slow fashion. And then, as you said, the equaliser comes along through Malik Wilkes, who actually struggled in the early stages of the game. And his shot actually wasn't really that good. I have to say that Luke Southwood, you know, should, and he'll know it himself, should be doing better with that one, despite how good he's been this season. Ben, I mean, do you know what on earth's happened there with Southwood? Has he slipped? Has he lost his concentration? You know, what was your take from that?
So difficult. I mean, it's not something that we're accustomed to with Luke Southwood. And I think since he's come into the team, he's been, you know, he talked about consistency before. He's been the, you know, the consistent pillar in that team. You know, there's an argument to suggest that he's kind of really solidified a defence in some respects. I probably wouldn't subscribe to that, because I still feel like we're conceding too many goals as a unit. But you know, the player of the month's kind of awards that he's received from our own site, you know, he's been fantastic. People have been voting for him in absolute droves. And I think he's on to like two or three awards now this season for player of the month. So, you know, he's been brilliant. And any other sort of area of the pitch, it kind of goes unnoticed, but because he's a goalkeeper, he gets punished for it. It looked like a slip to me. I'm sure people will kind of have a different view on it. But the problem is that it has cost us the goal. And he will be, you know, under scrutiny for that, and rightly so. But, you know, his performances this season completely out of the blue. And this is where it comes back to those kind of that real cliche, but the fine margins element. Normally that's just bread and butter stuff for him. He clears it out, picks it up, off we go again. But it was a bit of a mess. And unfortunately it has ended up sort of getting us the draw, really. So it's difficult. It is really difficult. And, you know, it's kind of a lack of concentration, slip, whatever it is, that is something that we've not expected from him, and we don't anticipate from him at all. I know that he'll bounce back. I'm sure he'll be fine. He's been fantastic for us this season. And I hope that this is just a kind of a one-off and we can move on from it. But, you know, the overall picture and the problem that we have as a team right now and as a club is that we can't keep having these one-offs. You know, we had the Sheffield United game a couple of weeks ago, which was just dreadful. You know, we could class that as a one-off. But now we've got another situation where individual errors is a one-off. These things tend to keep happening to us. And at some point, we have to look at the bigger picture and go, well, what is the problem here? You know, what's the issue? As I said, we've not won at home now since sort of late September. That's not a good record to have in this league, because, you know, other teams are doing much better than we are in that respect, regardless of points deduction. So it does become a very good, very difficult thing to justify overall. And I'm just, you know, again, going back to that thing, but just frustrated with the result, frustrated with the way that we kind of attacked in the second half, and didn't really kind of move ourselves forward and put ourselves in a position to win the game.
Yeah, I think the thing with those one-off errors is the fact that they build up, and as you rightly allude to, and then they kind of cost us kind of throughout the season in our current situation. That is very, very costly for us. To be fair to us, I have to give it to us. We did push for a late winner kind of at the end. There was only one team really that looked like winning it at the end there, despite, you know, a goal for Hull City being chalked off a little bit earlier on. In the end, if you take away the refereeing decisions, you completely take that out of the game. I know that we haven't really touched on that yet, but I think we're all kind of in agreement that it was kind of three stonewall penalties. If you take those away, was this really a fair result? And I'm also going to ask you for your man of the match as well. I know that we don't usually do it on here, but I quite like asking for a man of the match. I'm killing two birds with one stone here. Ben, your verdict on those two questions?
Okay, man of the match first. I thought Dele Pescara was fantastic today, as you said as well, Ads. I thought he was really, really good. He was all over the place, but in a positive way, you know, kind of got up and down the pitch, applied pressure when kind of seemingly no one else around him did. You know, looked to create things, kind of interchanged between the left and the middle, tried to link up with Andy Carroll reasonably well, you know, and was always on the front foot. So for me, man of the match would have been, you know, Dele Pescara. In terms of the fair result, I mean, it's very, very difficult to separate the emotion straight after the game. I suppose, you know, Hull, from an objective point of view, didn't crumble when they conceded. And obviously it was late in the first half, but they came out and straight away they were at it in the second half. So, you know, full credit to them. It's a very difficult question to answer without doing a full analysis. I think realistically, it's difficult to discount certainly the two penalty claims in the second half, which for me, and I hate the phrase, but they were, you know, were dead set, stonewall, whatever you want to call it, penalties. How they weren't given, I don't know. So with that in mind, you know, it's difficult to fully answer that question. I know it's a complete cop-out, but it's very difficult to balance that question with the practicalities of what went on in the game. So, you know, keep going back to that thing of being frustrated. Had those penalties have been given? Probably. We would have scored at least one of those. How they weren't given, I don't know. I really don't know. But it's a difficult question to answer. Man of the match one, a lot easier to do. But I just feel that we should have had enough in the second half. And as you say, you know, we had a late surge, but it was just too late. And Hull by that point was sticking sort of, you know, 10 men behind the ball and really shutting up shop and being defensively solid. So, you know, it's tough. It's a tough one to take. And I suppose the cliche is that we move on to the next game and see what happens from there.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on man of the match. I think Tom Delibashiri was threatening again on the left wing. And I thought he was, as I said, a real threat throughout. So I completely agree with that one. I think in terms of the other question, I think I've kind of stitched myself up here because it is a very, very difficult kind of question if you discard the penalties. But if you take away all that for me, I think it's a fair draw. I think Hull fans and Reading fans will disagree with it. But I think if you take away those kind of decisions, I think a draw is a fair result in the end. I think the fact that we pushed forward towards the end kind of made us deserve a draw. I think if you take away, well, if you actually put in those refereeing decisions, though, you know, as you said, we would have scored at least one of those, I reckon, with Swift on the pitch. Andy Carroll as well. So I think for me, yeah, if we put those decisions in, then yeah, we should have won the game. But again, you know, it's frustrating. We you know, didn't, I don't think on the day, created enough clear-cut chances. I think, you know, Andy Carroll's chances were kind of, they were half ones. They weren't full ones. You're not expecting him to really score those, 100%. But yeah, as you said, the only thing we can kind of do now is kind of look on and focus on next week. But we are going to focus on the mailbag though, as we answer some of your questions.
Send in your views to thetarnhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Right, I apologise to everyone. I know that I put the tweet out for Tarnhurstend questions for the podcast tonight. I put it out quite late. Let me just double check. Yeah, it was 5:1, and you've had, 2 hours to get your questions in. So apologies for that. But we'll go through some of these questions nonetheless. I think we'll kind of put two of these ones together. Alistair says, why are EFL refs so bad? And
that's a brilliant question. That's a great question, to be honest. I love that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who knows, Alistair? I don't know, mate. No idea. I mean, yeah, it was our show today, but that's a great question. I love that.
I just can't believe, like, at least two of them weren't given. I guess one of them I could let him off with. You know, you have the odd howler in a high-intensity championship game in front of a crowd of thousands. Yes, one of those out of the three that you'd probably miss, but, you know, the other two, you've got to have a look at, and you've got to say, you know, what on earth's going on? You know, where is your mind at? I think carrying on kind of the same theme, are we allowed a VAR yet? With 120 million on the line for teams, it would make sense. My view on VAR, it works, I think, if you've got the right people using the technology. I think, a lot of people are saying, you know, it takes away the enjoyment of a goal. You know, you can't celebrate a goal fully anymore. And I completely understand that. But there's a lot of money on the line these days. And I think providing that it's quick and, VAR is used in the right way, I think for me, I think it can be something that kind of is introduced. I know that I think the Europeans probably do it a lot better than we do at the moment. I know that it was first introduced at the World Cup 2018, I think it was, and they used it very well, the restroom across the world. So I think we need to learn a lot from Europe before we kind of implement it. But it's definitely something for consideration. I know that Jean-Michel Seri from Fulham was saying, you know, the championship is a lot better than a lot of the top European leagues, and just, you know, how important it is as well. So for me, providing it's used in the right way, I think it would make sense, but I'm not sure if I have the faith that it'll work smoothly in England. But we'll soon see about that one. Ben, what do you think about VAR?
One of my good friends is a Palace fan, and he said when it first came in, it was a nightmare because it's like, you, as you said, you never know when you're supposed to celebrate a goal or not. But I think his perception is that it's got easier this season. You know, there's been a lot of fine tuning and a lot of tweaks with it and stuff. So I think it has got better. Personally, for me, I think the argument is going to intensify for the championship. I think, you know, the question that the person put out is absolutely right. The amount of money involved is ridiculous. You know, we haven't had too many controversial calls this season, to my knowledge, that would kind of potentially require VAR. So it's not so much of a problem for me personally. But yeah, and anything that kind of judges the rules and kind of cements the rules is a positive for me. I feel like today, yeah, at least two of those would have been given 100% if he'd had a monitor to have a look at. And this whole business about it slows the game down. Well, so does play acting, so does injury, so does everything else. So I don't think that's a valid argument, really. When people criticise VAR, I think there was a period of time where it really needed to bed in and people needed to use it properly, because, you know, when it first came in, there were situations where they were checking goals that were quite clearly goals, and that, you know, from a live audience point of view, that would have been incredibly frustrating. But now, you know, that those calls are only going to intensify, and I think the only way they're going to really kind of push for that is if something major happens in one of the, you know, the playoff semi-finals or the playoff final when it really matters, in terms of those key focus games. So yeah, I my personal opinion is I don't think it will be long before they drop it down. We've already got Hawkeye in the championship, which doesn't seem to be used that much at all, or from a fan's point of view, you don't notice it happening. So I think it will be sooner rather than later, but I think it's just going to take a really high profile decision to force the FA's hand and the EFL's hand on that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. It will take, I think there will be a tipping point where there'll be a certain decision that kind of, yeah, that kind of makes the technology come in. Thank you Tom, for your question anyway. I think we could pretty much do a whole podcast on that. So it's definitely one to have a look at future podcasts as well. Christian here says, what have you made of Andy Yeardom as captain? I know that he was captain of Barnsley, I think it was, before he came to the club. Obviously, we've got quite a few leaders in there. We've got obviously Liam Moore as our club captain. We've got Scott Dan, who took the captain's armband, I think it was in the second half. Yeardom's obviously skipper of Barnsley previously. Michael Morrison, obviously, he's out at the moment, but was previous skipper of Birmingham City. So, yeah, I mean, obviously having him there in Swansea with 3-2 victory, I guess, is a good thing for him as captain. What have you made of him as our skipper, kind of our stand-in at the moment?
I think he's been outstanding, to be honest with you, Adam. I really do. And I know it's probably a bit of a you know, knee-jerk reaction to that question, but I think he's been brilliant. I really do. And I think, you know, when he talks and the way that he kind of expresses his emotions and the way that he's open to, even before he was captain, the way that he deals with the media and the fans and kind of stuff that he does on Extra, he kind of seems to get it. And I think, you know, today it was quite clear with sort of 5-10 minutes to go in the first half that he was struggling, cracked on with it, obviously couldn't come out in the second half, which, you know, was what it was, really. Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very happy for him to continue as captain. He's been very, very good. The players clearly want to play for him as well. But the positive is that he goes off and Scott Dan just fills in that role seamlessly. You know, and Scott Dan is potentially becoming the new Michael Morrison for us, hopefully without the injuries. But you're right when you say that there's kind of more leaders in that team, and that's what we need to do. That's what we need to have as a football club. So yeah, very, very pleased with Yeardom. You know, his performances haven't dropped, and you know, we had that thing a couple of years ago, and I know Chris Gunter is a bit of a poison chalice for Reading fans, but he was made captain for a little bit, and his performance just nosedived absolutely off the radar. Yeardom doesn't seem to have had that problem. So it's a positive that he's been able to keep that level of consistency. in an otherwise fairly inconsistent team. And I, you know, personally, I'm a massive fan of Andy Yindom. I think he's absolutely phenomenal. So long may that continue, really. But obviously, if he is injured, then we've got players like Scott Dan, potentially people like Josh Loren that could come in and do that job as well. So, yeah, we are developing a bit more of a leadership structure within the team. But yeah, very, very, very pleased with Yindom at the moment.
I remember him doing a video not so long ago with Josh Loren. I think he was giving encouragement to someone. I'm not 100% sure what it 100% was, but you know, it was a really nice video for, I think it might have been for a fan as well. So yeah, I like Yindom, and for me, I think I think he's been a decent captain. You know, he's one player whose contract expires at the end of the season. I'm not sure that we're going to get him tied down to a longer term deal, but you know, let's hope so. You know, against all odds.
Yeah, I mean, that video, that was someone who got in touch with Star, actually, and just said, look, my son's really struggling with you know, elements of the game and life in general. And I can say, you know, firsthand that without a moment's hesitation, those two stepped up and did it. And that's, for me, it's not just about what you do on the pitch, it's what you do off the pitch with the fans, and they were just phenomenal with that. So, you know, that's going to make a massive difference to that young man's life. Just a couple of minute video from those two, and that's what I'm saying. That's what we need from this football club, and it's re-engagement of the community and the fans, and that's what we've talked about time and again on podcasts and, you know, articles that we put out through the website. So, yeah, long may that continue.
Fantastic. I hope that the guy's doing well now as well. So yeah, and I hope that's really helped. So yeah, I listened to it, and yeah, it was a fantastic message. And also Josh Laurent as well, turning up at someone's door as well, and I think handing them something. We have some good guys in there. It does feel, maybe not the performances, but in terms of some of the characters, like the 11-12 season, I think you know, a select few of the characters are really good in there. So yeah, it's really nice. Last question though, moving on to our last mailbag question. Luke says, why do you think we're giving teams too many chances? It seems to be a habit of ours. Well, we can't keep a clean sheet, really. And it's a real source of frustration for me that we can't keep a clean sheet. I know that we did against all odds against Cardiff City earlier on in the season. Obviously, we've done it as well against Middlesbrough. But yeah, it's been a real source of frustration for me, because we've got the kind of the centre backs to keep a clean sheet. You know, Tom Holmes has really stepped up his game in recent weeks, and Scott Dan as well. You know, who's got Premier League experience. I guess, you know, all the team has to kind of chip in to make sure that, you know, we don't concede. But you know, what is your verdict on that question, Ben? You know, why do you think we're giving teams too many opportunities to score?
Well, the simple answer is that teams don't know how to play against us. I think, you know, last season, you know, particularly when we kind of went on that streak of being really positive, we had that kind of that protection of the defence, didn't we, with kind of Reno and Loren in the pivot role. We haven't really had that so much. You know, that go back to the Sheffield United game, and the midfield was far too fluid for my liking. It was just all over the place, really. It was very, very difficult to track who was playing where. Today, a little bit more organised, but it does, you know, the midfield in our team have to put through an awful lot of work to snuff out these chances at source. And for me, I don't think they've been doing that particularly well. I think Loren has been a shadow of himself. You know, in the last couple of months, really, as opposed to last season. I think Renamota really is someone that potentially you'd look to stick back straight in the team when he's fit. It's difficult, isn't it? I don't know if we've given up too many chances, or if teams that we're playing are far more clinical than they were last season. I don't know. I mean, it's the you know, as a defender, when I used to play, like, I would always go for the clean sheet, 100%. And I'm sure if you ask any goalkeeper, like, want a clean sheet, 100%. I don't think we've given up huge amounts of chances. I'm sure someone will correct me on the stats, but you know, it just seems like teams are a lot more clinical. Like today, like Hull didn't create huge amounts of chances, but the one that they did have was converted for a mistake. It's just one of those things that we're in at the moment in terms of those situations. It's difficult. You know, it's a really, really good question. And I would have to kind of look at the stats to be able to fully answer that. But I just feel like teams are a lot more clinical. You know, strikers are a lot better. There's a lot more creative midfielders in the league than probably there have been in previous seasons. But we seem to get, you know, overrun in midfield a lot of the times when these chances are created, and it leaves the defence kind of flat-footed, really. So it's a difficult one to answer in a short space of time, but I just feel like teams are taking the chances more than maybe we are. You know, we're apart from today, you know, we create a certain amount of chances each game, but we just don't take them as a team. And that, you know, again, I keep saying it, but it comes back to that frustrating element of this current team and this current squad at the moment, and the way that we kind of set ourselves up for every game.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is small errors as well. I mean, not just Southwood today. I think, you know, taking a look at today's goal, there probably should have been one or two men around him, probably a lot closer, and kind of, you know, not allowing him to get his shot off. So I think for me, some of it is small errors. Obviously, I'll need to have kind of a closer look in terms of the season overall to be able to answer that question in full, because it would be interesting to see, you know, the percentage of perhaps individual errors as opposed to just, you know, tactical, you know, a tactical misfit maybe, or something like that. So it's, yeah, it'll be interesting to look back maybe at the end of the campaign. I know that, you know, probably Pownoe's team were already doing that, you know, the analysts and those people, to try and cut out those kind of errors or kind of tweak a few things. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see at the end of the campaign, and maybe even now, if we take a look back over it, you know, if you know, how many were down to individual errors and how many were down to other things. But moving swiftly on, we'll go to news bites. But I'm going to keep news bites in this section as kind of part of this streamlined show. And it's probably a good job in kind of the under 23s pace. From 2-1 up at half time yesterday, with goals from Kelvin Ihifatioman and Claudio Osorio against Norwich City, they fell to a 5-2 defeat in what was a hugely disappointing second 45, really, for the young Royals. I think we kind of want to move swiftly on from that. One thing to point out is the fact that Kelvin Braifa and Mamadi Kamara actually both started that game. We're both on the bench today for us. But obviously it's on Saturday for you. It's obviously Saturday for us, and probably be going up on Monday for you guys. But before I do go on, I'm going to stick to the topic of under 23s. You know, I do want to publicly call out the website's editor, Simeon, because he's come up with this Senga bus chant on Twitter for Jack Senga after he scored his goal. I think it was against Middlesbrough the other day, and I think it's been living kind of rent free in my head for kind of the last week. So you know, a big thank you kind of for that one. It just won't go out of my head now, and I'll probably be thinking about it tonight as well. Moving on to the women's team, congratulations has to go to Emma Harries for scoring in the England under 23 games in an 11-0 victory, actually, against Estonia. I think it was on Tuesday, and that was actually the same day as the senior team won 20-0 against Latvia. So it's catching, it's 31-0 on the day for the Three Lions. That's not too bad, is it, really? For the domestic Reading team, they're in action against Chelsea next weekend, and what will be a really tough test, actually, against Emma Hayes' side. I think they're in FA Cup final action tomorrow, obviously yesterday probably for you guys. Yeah, you know, good luck to Kelly Chambers' team, because that's going to be a very difficult one. Currently sitting in eighth in the Super League, but it's quite tight, really, mid-table. So it's kind of anyone's guess, really, to see where they'll finish at the end of the campaign. I'm interested to see, you know, what happens and where they finish up. Just to finish up quickly, on injuries, Junior Hoylett's back out on the training pitch. So too's Andy Rinomota, although both are quite a while away from returning to first team action. Liam Moore and Ovi Ajari are both out for a couple of weeks with their respective injuries. Although Felipe Araruna could potentially make the matchday squad at some point, you know, if he ever does return. He's building his fitness up at the moment. He might be needed if Yeardon's out for a while, actually. So let's hope he can return. Lucas Zhao as well was expected to be on the grass in the next couple of weeks, and what will be a massive boost for us as another option to Andy Carroll maybe even giving him a rest at some point. But Tom McIntyre looks set to be out until the new year after suffering a setback with his injury. So that will be a bit of a blow for us. But thank you to the journos, the local journos, Benji, welcome to the Royals family, and Jonathan as well for those press conference updates. So it's still not great news really on the injury front, to be honest, but hopefully we can get as many players back as soon as possible. Right, that's it for the news bites. Let's head straight into next Saturday's meeting with West Brom as we tackle the big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Well, it's going to be a tough one, I think, for us. I don't think there's kind of any doubts about that. They came out on top against Coventry City this lunchtime, obviously Saturday lunchtime for you guys. Carlon Grant, 20th minute opener for them, was followed up by a controversial own goal from Carl McFadzean to put them 2-0 up at the break. I think it was much needed for them, really, having gone on a kind of winless run. McFadzean did get himself on the score sheet at the other end late on, but it was kind of too little too late for them, really, and West Brom won all 3 points. And I guess it was a really impressive result, considering it was at the CBS Arena that's usually bouncing, and away from home and against adversity as well with their recent winless run. So fair play to them. I mean, focusing more on Valerian Ishmael's side, they were winless in their past four prior to that Midlands derby. There's kind of no doubting the quality they have throughout their squad. Obviously, they've got England international Sam Johnston between the sticks. Matt Clark, the loanee from Brighton, looks solid at centre-back. Connor Townsend recently signed a new contract, reliable, as always. Alex Mowat, the central midfielder, and Ishmael seem to be kind of a match made in heaven, really, after spending time together at Barnsley last season. And also a special kind of shout-out to Carlon Grant, who seems to be in much better form this season, obviously getting himself on the score sheet against the Sky Blues. They're currently in third, I believe, as we record this, with QPR playing Stoke on Sunday. But that was a much-needed result for them nonetheless, and a real morale booster for them. So all in all, as I said, this will be a tough one. How do you rate our chances going into this one, Ben? I mean, the atmosphere surrounding the manager's style of play, obviously there's been criticism of it, and also criticisms of their board as well, the hierarchy. So the atmosphere isn't really the best at the moment going into our match at the Hawthorns. So do you think we can take advantage of that? And how do you rate our chances going into this one?
I mean, we've struggled today against, all due respect, lesser opposition. I think it's going to be a very difficult game. It's a cracking result for West Brom today against, a very, very good Coventry team who have done wonders this year. And I generally thought that Coventry might have been able to get something out of that game, but it wasn't to be for them. It's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very, very difficult. I guess the positive for us is that we've got another week on a training pitch. That said, we've had a week, over the last week, and it didn't really seem to have clicked with the players today. So the question would be, what's going to change in the next week to be able to get something out of the game? I would happily take a draw out of next week. I really would. It's not going to be an easy game at all. And, the only positive is that games are coming thick and fast now with, coming to the end of the year and through the Christmas period. They've got some very, very good players. I don't think that the unrest at the club is really going to derail them too much. I would expect them, regardless of what they do next week against us, to be there or thereabouts this year. I think, the manager's done a good job in terms of stabilising a team that were kind of sort of all over the place, really. And he's come in and done very well. You mentioned Mowat in the middle there. We know from experience playing Barnsley last year that he was a phenomenal football player. We came up against the manager with Barnsley, and they were a very, very good outfit last year as well. So it's going to be very, very difficult. But all these games are, we have to really do the best that we can in every game. I don't think we can match them for for overall quality in the squad. I really don't. I think they've got far too many, kind of quality players in the team that are really going to be able to take control of the game. Really, I just hope we can get out with something. But you know, everyone expects us to lose at Swansea, and we managed to pick up a win. So you can't predict this league. It's impossible. It really is. It's not an ideal game for us to be having at this time. But that said, you know, as I said previously, we've got a week to kind of prepare for that and get ourselves set up in the shape that we'd want. I would expect changes to be made in terms of, you know, it's unlikely that Yeardon will be fit for that game. So you'd imagine Tete would come in. The question mark really is whether or not he sticks with the one up front or goes for two, whether or not he goes defensive in terms of dropping more people back in midfield. Not sure really. But it will be interesting how we're able to test ourselves against a side like West Brom at this stage.
Yeah, I think I'd take a point. I'm going with the same as you. I think I definitely would. You know, let's not forget that Albion have gone unbeaten in their 10 league games at home this season, winning six and losing four. Their kind of lack of cutting edge has prevented them from turning draws into wins. But the fact is, and this is the daunting fact for Reading, is the fact that they have remained unbeaten. This is a really like the million-dollar question, and one that we really kind of need to ask Paulo, and hopefully Paulo has the answer to it. But what do we need to do to end that kind of unbeaten run? What can we do that's different? You know, will it be a set-piece routine maybe or two? Or, you know, will it be like the kick-off routine that Bournemouth did last, you know, obviously for us last night against Fulham? I mean, you know, what can we do to kind of end their unbeaten run?
We've got great chances. You know, I said it today at half time, but you know, if Halilovic starts, we've got to get him on the ball more because he's capable of putting those balls in. Swift needs to have a better game than he had today. If we're picking individuals, we just need to be a little bit more practical with the ball. We need to pressure a little bit more. And the main thing for me today was when we were kind of in possession, the movement needs to be a lot better in terms of being able to put pressure on them, but kind of pick out the runners. You know, Andy Carroll is not one of those players that's going to make dying runs, but you know that he's going to be able to hold up the ball. That said, you've got to give him the ball. You know, you've got to give him some sort of service. And that's what we've, you know, I'd anticipate that he would start next week, regardless of the formation. We've got to be able to supply him with what we need. You know, we've undoubtedly got players that can unlock defences and really be attack-minded. But, you know, it's those little errors, as you alluded to earlier. You know, we've got to snuff those out. We've got to stop them. We've got to also be able to create something in the final third and be a little bit more proactive when we've got the ball rather than kind of, you know, playing sideways balls and going backwards. So, you know, the movement's got to be a little bit better. We've got to be a little bit more forceful. And we've just got to create those chances and then take them when they arrive. That's the bottom line at the moment. And it, as I said, it's going to be very, very difficult against the team that, as you said, haven't done particularly badly at home at all.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a tough one. I think, you know, perhaps marginal gains will be the difference in the end. I think that's what we need to work on, is those marginal gains. I know that it's very early days considering our last match for us only finished a couple of hours ago. I mean, but do you think there should be any change either to the formation or personnel kind of to counteract kind of the baggies, or or should we kind of focus on our own game and make sure that we're cutting out those little errors and making the marginal gains and having that urgency that we need to go and win? I mean, you know, which approach would you take if you were Paulo in terms of personnel and formation?
I think it's difficult in terms of the injuries. I mean, obviously, it looked at the time like taking Halilovic off was tactical. I personally would not have made that change because, I felt that Halilovic was having a little bit of joy down that right-hand side. Yeardon is kind of the big question, obviously, because of his injury. The goalkeeper, I think, will stay in role. Dan and Holmes, depends if he wants to go radical and just go for it. I mean, there's no better way to kind of go for it in terms of attacking than really sticking two up top. And I'm desperate to see that as a fan. I want to see that, whoever those two are, I don't care, but just start them from the off and be a bit more attacking. I think in terms of the personnel that he picks, it will be very, very clear on his intentions and what he wants out of the game. If we go there and we kind of overload the midfield and say, right, we're going to shut up shop here, not let them come towards us too much, then he's going to settle for a draw. If he wants to take it to them, which I would love to see happen, you know, come what may, just go attacking, just literally go gung-ho and see what happens. I mean, it's one of those games that you look at on paper, and even before all of this, you know, we knew as a group on this podcast that West Brom were going to be good. So on paper, it's always one of those games you look at and go, well, it's potentially a gimme in terms of we've got nothing to lose, let's just see what happens. But the position we're in, you know, we're going to see over the next few weeks and months, we're going to see a lot more about this manager in terms of his intentions and what he wants to do. And for me personally, and this is probably why I'm not in the job, but like, I would just go for it. I would just attack him. I'd go two up top, you know, overload them on the wings and kind of get those balls into the box and just kind of create as many chances as possible, really. You know, it's very unlikely that we're going to be able to keep a clean sheet. So let's just go for it and see what happens. You know, that said, it's very difficult to predict what he's going to want to do, because there is a little bit of lack of consistency at the moment in terms of how he wants to set up the team and how he approaches these games, really. But for me personally, I would just go all out attack and just see what happens, because we've got nothing to lose in this game, really.
It's a difficult one for me, because I know that West Brom have stuck with their 3-4-3. They haven't really gone away from that, even with their central midfield injury crisis. I know that they had Jason Malumbi out, Jake Livermore, both of them were out with suspensions. And I think they had Robert Snodgrass out as well with a back injury. And even despite that, they've still gone with the 3-4-3 with the two in midfield. I know that Garner Hickman came on for the 19-year-old, you know, came into the starting lineup today and did very well. Usually a right back, but you know, was very composed on the ball. So I think he'll go with a 3-4-3 yet again, Valerian Ismail, and that should make it a little bit easier for us to prepare. But that the formation's really a strange one in terms of going for it or not going for it, because it can be so different, you know, the 3-4-3, you know, depending on whether you're attacking or you're defending more, you know, that sort of thing. So I think for me, it's going to be a really difficult one to work out. I mean, me personally, I think my preferred formation for Reading, I think, and it suits us because we don't have, well, apart from maybe Bashiru or maybe Hoylett, at the moment, you know, obviously Mate has yet to come back. But I mean, the lack of wing threat, I think for me, kind of makes my preferred formation, when everyone's available, a 3-4-2-1, in terms of having, you know, maybe Andy Carroll up front, and then the two in behind him is kind of inside forwards, but, you know, quite central in a way with John Swift and Ovi Ejaria, and have, you know, Brahman and Yeardom as the wing backs as well. I think that could have paid dividends for us, but obviously we've got Liam Moore out at the moment. We've got, you know, Tom McIntyre out, so it kind of makes it that kind of impossible. Obviously, we've got Michael Morrison out as well. So if we did have all of them available, we'd have the resources to play a back three. But nonetheless, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm predicting that he's going to stick with it. I think he's going to go with the same formation as he did today. Stick with that back four, obviously with Moore and Ejaria still out. Obviously, it's easier to replace the Jari because you've got Halilovic, but with Moore, it's you know, leaving us quite short in options at centre back. I know that we've got Josh Laurent in there, but he's not exactly an orthodox option, even though he did play well. Sticking on the theme of predictions, then, my kind of most important question of this show, and you know, the final question of this show, really, is the match prediction hole. I went with a 2-1 win. Ben, you, I think, went with a 2-0 win. Both Sim and Mark went with a 2-2 draw, so I'm sure they'll get some points on the board. I'm not sure on the others. I've got Mark's spreadsheet at the moment. So, yeah, I'm sorry I don't have that for you at the moment, the league standings. But after all, this is an unprofessional joke of a podcast, so there you go, really. I'm going to go and start things off And I think it's going to be kind of a similar result to today. I know that it's quite a bold prediction to make, considering that, you know, West Brom are probably one of the best teams in the league. But I don't think it's an impossible task for us. I just think it's going to be an uphill battle. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I think it was 1-1 the last time we went to the Hawthorns. I think it was an Ovi Ejaria strike, if I remember rightly. But Ben, let's get yours then. What's your prediction for this one?
So difficult. I mean, I just can't. I'm literally falling down the predictions league ridiculously quick at the moment. It's just a mess. But I just can't have us to lose. So I'm going to go with you and go 1-1 draw as well. I just don't. Yeah, I can't predict us a loss, which is ridiculous, isn't it, really, given the nature of where we're at and the league in itself. But yeah, 1-1 draw is what I'm going to go for.
Hey, right. Perfect. Well, that wraps up episode number 281 of the podcast, perhaps with a bit of a different show, but I hope you enjoyed it nonetheless. Thank you to everyone once again for listening. A big shout out to those who donate on our Patreon. And my last thanks has to go to my splendid guest for this week, Ben. Ben, thank you very much.
No problem. Adam, you smashed it. Absolutely smashed it. Mark will be, where's he gone? Lanzarote or somewhere probably. But he's probably listening to this now and going, I'm out of a job. So yeah, well done, mate. That was really good. And as I said, it's always really difficult to do it straight after the game. But hopefully everyone's enjoyed some of it anyway. And you'll tune in next week for a bit more of a composed chat, shall we say.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I don't think Mark's going to be relieved of his duties yet orally, but but thank you nonetheless anyway. Yeah, nerve-wracking experience, but a good one nonetheless. I very much enjoyed it. It wasn't exactly the result that I was hoping for on my hosting debut. I don't think it was a result that any of us were really hoping for, but it wasn't exactly a royal disaster either. One more point on the board, one place up with Cardiff City slipping up, and 5 points now above the relegation zone. A missed opportunity? Well, perhaps so. There's only one thing we can do now, and that's to look to the future as we head to the West Midlands next weekend for a tough tie. But apart from that, there's only one thing left to say, and I think you've guessed it if you're a regular viewer or listener to the show, and that is, come on, you Ars.
You smile. Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems on.